Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of T1 Talks. This is a podcast where we aim to share our experiences living with type 1 diabetes to build a sense of community for diabetics, both type 1 and 2. We want to dispel any myths about what it means to be a type 1 and increase diabetic awareness through our stories. I'm Gianna, a type 1 diabetic of 14 years and a recent graduate of the College of New Jersey.
And I'm Victoria. I'm a medical student from Saskatchewan, Canada, and I was just diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in March of 2020.
So before we dive into today's episode, we've mentioned before that we're both active users of the app Beyond Type 1, and we know a couple of you have reached out saying you found us through the app, so we think that it's only right that we take a quick minute to talk about what's been going on this week in the diabetic community involving one of its co-founders, Sam Talbot. Since our last episode, the organization has been facing some backlash about quietly receiving funds from big pharma organizations. Someone reached out to Sam with the hope to convince him to end Beyond Type 1's partnership with those organizations and to focus more on insulin affordability. Talbot's response was incredibly inappropriate, immature, rude, and offensive, and we want to make it clear that we in no way, shape, or form support his actions. Since this has happened, Beyond Type 1 has released a statement distancing themselves from him and discussing their work with big pharmas, and Sam Talbot has made the decision to step down from the board as well. We have always held this group to a high expectation, and we hope that with their extremely large influence in the community, they can do better in the future. Feel free to check out their website and social media for any updates on the situation if you would like.
So with that, we'll start today's episode where we're going to be talking about diabetes in relationships. And a little while back, we saw a post on the app that caught our attention where someone had posted saying that their significant other had broken up with them. And this person was really blaming themselves and their diabetic mood swings and truly felt like diabetes was ruining their life and their chance at ever having a good relationship.
I can't even begin to fathom how damaging it must be to be told that your diabetes is the reason someone doesn't want to be with you. I can't imagine that something you're going to have to take with you and carry not only into your next relationship, but with you through everything you do the rest of your life, knowing that it took something you really loved away from you. I would totally understand how someone in that type of situation would feel the need to hate their diabetes and really believe that it's ruining their life.
Yeah, I think it would be so hard to have to move from one relationship into the other with the same thing that sort of broke you up before. There's a lot of hope of being able to change. If you do something in your previous relationship, you can do better next time. But diabetes isn't like that. It's a day-to-day just going to be there with you. And I've seen it a lot on Facebook too, where diabetics definitely feel like their relationships and their friendships are stolen because of their diabetes. And I really can understand how they feel this way. From my own experience, relationships can be hard, even on the easy days. And so when you have diabetes added in, it just adds that extra layer that makes things a little bit harder. And sometimes that can make things a lot harder. And I think just like whether you're starting out a relationship with diabetes and you're trying to navigate how to tell them or how to move through that, or you're like me, where you were in a relationship and then you're diagnosed with diabetes, I think it's all hard. There's so many adjustments to make either way. And the complexity, I think, can either bring you closer together or really push you apart. I think we need to stress that this isn't just romantic relationships, but it's also family relationships and friendships as well.
Diabetes plays such a huge role in all of my relationships. It affects the way that I treat the people in my life, and their response tells me a lot about them as well. I haven't been in a relationship yet, but it's definitely something I think about when searching for potential partners. And I think it's important that, diabetic or non-diabetic, keep in mind you choose the people that are in your life. You get to decide who your friends are, you get to decide who your partners are, and you get to decide which family members you want to keep in your life. So really think about people that deserve your time and people that respect you. And if your partner is telling you that they're breaking up with you for something related to your diabetes, then you deserve better. And you can find better if you give yourself the chance. There are plenty of people out there in happy, healthy relationships with diabetes. It just takes a lot of work. So I know, like, for you, Victoria, you said that you were with Carlin before you had diabetes. Was there a major shift when you were first diagnosed?
Definitely. It was super, obviously, like a huge change. It was the day that I found out in January when I had that first finger prick was probably the hardest day. But we have a 2-hour time difference between where I live and where he lives. And so when I was texting Carlin in the morning, he was sleeping and I was in class. And so that's fine, obviously, that he's sleeping. It was 6 in the morning. He's allowed to sleep. But what it meant was that I was just progressively going through my day texting him probably 20 messages. is, where it started out with probably me saying, good morning, I'm in this silly diabetic workshop for the whole morning, yay. And then me checking my sugars and then being 16 and being like, oh no. And then checking them again and then being higher, and then me washing my hands and then being higher, and just all of these things, checking with new meters. This progression through my morning where it was just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And to the point where I was calling my doctor, I had made an appointment. Again, I made it through the rest of the morning and we were done probably by like 10 o'clock, which is 8 a.m. in BC. So he was just waking up.
What a wake up call that is.
You know, I can't even imagine what he was thinking when he was reading through those messages, other than probably a similar process to me, except that he would have seen the most recent ones, which were, I'm calling my doctor and making an appointment, this isn't good. But there was a lot of sort of innocence in those first few text messages of just fear, but not really knowing what was going on. And then it just got so much worse. And from his perspective, it's hard because I am a medical student who lives far away, and all he can do is just listen to me, and he can't offer me fake reassurances, right? Like, he can't tell me that things are going to be okay or that I don't have diabetes. That was probably what I have and is what I have. And so I think the distance is hard in those situations because you can't just be there with somebody. You have to rely on them to be looking after themselves. But I will say he left his phone on ring after that, so he didn't miss any more messages. I think from my perspective, what I needed from him was really just the reassurance that our relationship was safe. And he really gave me that 100%. There was never any question of whether this was going to change anything. To our credit, we've already dealt with another autoimmune disease diagnosis in our relationship time. So I think that it sort of primes you to deal with the next one. And this one, I was much more able to manage myself, especially with my knowledge and being here by myself. I had to, but I think that that's helpful too, when you're sort of able to take control of your disease so that your partner doesn't have to. He's never the one telling me what to do for my diabetes, reminding me, nagging me. He sometimes reminds me, but you know, it's not him taking responsibility. It's always my responsibility to look after myself.
Yeah, I think it's really great that you guys were able to set up those boundaries so early on between being helpful and trying to control your diabetes for you.
Yeah, like I think that we all have our own wants and needs when it comes to how people respond to our diabetes. It's easy to say that we're all individuals, but I do think that there's sort of like a safe way to ask these questions and find out what diabetics prefer from their partners or their relationships without sort of coming across as being critical, I guess. Like, that's sort of my main thing, is like, I am always happy when people are curious, but I don't like it when people are critical. And so that's, I think, the finest line you have to walk in those conversations, is ask me how I'm doing. Ask me how my sugars are doing. Don't tell me to do something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's definitely a fine line between judgment and genuinely being curious and wanting to learn more. It's really nice when people ask questions. You don't have to, but what you should never do is start assuming things.
Exactly. Also, I think just being able to sort of talk about the hard things. I know when I was first diagnosed, or like when I was first going through all of this, my anxiety was insane. And my anxiety is something that I work on actively managing every day. And so it's not something that I get to ignore, because I can't. It just drives me crazy. And I think that that was probably one of the hardest parts for Carlin, letting me work through my anxiety, which is terrible sometimes, and not being able to help, because his suggestions would just throw me over the edge, because they were just so, for me, they were so unreasonable. So he would suggest, test your sugars less, because then you're less anxious about what the numbers are. Check your Libre less, check your sugars less, right? That was always his thing. He told me to take my Libre, my continuous glucose monitor, off once, and I cried on the phone for like 15 minutes.
And I totally get that, because to him, it looks like this thing is causing my partner pain. Let's get rid of it. Easy solution. When in reality, the things that are bothering us the most, the things that are tough everyday things, are things that we need to learn to manage. We can't just ignore our diabetes. We have to learn how to deal with it.
Exactly. And as much as, yes, it would reduce my anxiety about this thing right now, it doesn't actually reduce my anxiety. It would overall increase my anxiety, because then I don't have this information that I need to be healthy. And at that time, I was so sick. And again, it wasn't that he didn't care or that he thought that I shouldn't be looking after myself. It was just a communication error where he just didn't understand my needs in that moment were I have to be checking my sugars or else I'm unsafe. And so the actual thing that he could do to help is help me manage checking my sugars, right? How can I do this in a way that isn't, and I'll use this word nicely, but that isn't a little crazy, right? I don't need to be scanning my Libre every 3 minutes. That's a little bit too much, right? So like, let's work on scanning it every 10 minutes. Moving forward, let's try to reduce anxiety in other ways that isn't removing the technology, but just learning how to work with it, which is something that I'm still doing, but I'm way better at. I rarely check my sugars every 5 minutes anymore with my Dexcom even. Like, I don't even open the app.
Yeah, and I think a key aspect in a relationship between someone with diabetes and someone without is being able to sit down with that non-diabetic and explain why you're choosing to manage your diabetes in the way that you are. A big problem that I hear a lot about between married couples like this is a lack of understanding for the financial side of things. So as we went over last week, diabetes is so expensive. And I can understand why it would be unnerving to see all this money going towards something that you don't really understand. But if we sit down, talk to you about it, explain why our lives depend on this and why we need this to live a happy and healthy life, then I think your partner might even join in with you in the fight for insulin affordability. I think they're going to understand that it's ridiculous prices that we're paying, and I think that they're going to want to spend that money to keep you alive.
For sure. From my perspective, I worry so much about costs. I can't imagine if that was also coming from my partner, because already every time I check my sugars, I'm like, this is almost a dollar that cost me. Or every Dexcom sensor, it's like, that's $100. And so it's like, if I have to change my sensor out early, if I have to change my infusion set early, that's literally dollars I'm losing. And I think about that every single time, and it never comes from my partner. He is always, don't worry about the money. Don't worry about it. Do what you need to do. Like, you need your Dexcom to be working if it's not going to work. Or like this last time, my Dexcom sensor insertion was so painful. For almost an hour, it hurt. At that point, I'm like, I might need to take this out. And I know Dexcom would replace it in that circumstance. They're excellent. But it's just that anxiety of like, am I going to lose $100 now because I needed to take the sensor out early? Within an hour, it hasn't even warmed up yet just because it hurts so bad. It did feel better though. But I think that those are anxieties every diabetic has when we're spending so much money on things. And so it's really important that our partners support us and not make us feel extra guilty, because it would really be so hard on our relationship if we were constantly fighting about something that I need to stay alive.
Yeah. So something that I stress is never use a person's diabetes against them. And if you're a diabetic, I really recommend that you tell the people in your life how your emotions are affected by your diabetes so they can have a better understanding of, oh, her sugar's high, she's probably not in a mood to talk. Or, oh, her sugar's low, maybe she can't concentrate on this conversation right now. We'll save it for later. Those kind of things are really important in a relationship. And as obvious as those feelings might be to you as the diabetic living through it, it's not obvious to the other people in your life. So it's only fair that you communicate the way you're feeling and that you can have a conversation about it. On the other side of things, going back to using a person's diabetes against them, please never tell a diabetic to go test their sugar because they're acting a certain way. Unless you think it's a safety issue, of course, then do it. But I'm referring to a situation where maybe I'm being sassy and you tell me, oh, your sugar must be high, I'm not going to talk to you right now. Unless you know that my sugar's high, or unless I'm showing signs of DKA, you should never be telling me to test my sugar because you think something. Maybe it's well-intended, but it just makes me feel like all you're looking at when you see me is my diabetes. And personally, I don't like that at all. So if you're someone I trust enough to explain this to and take the time to explain the correlation between my blood sugars and my feelings, please don't use that against me.
Yeah, well, and I know I put a lot of value in my sugar numbers, which I shouldn't, and I'm working on. But I feel like I've failed when my sugars are really high or really low. And I don't want to tell people. I don't want to tell you that I can't do math and I added an extra unit of insulin that's now going to make me low for the next 2 hours, right? Like, I don't want to tell you that if I don't have to.
Oh, for sure. It always sucks. But for me, I've had diabetes for so long that my worst now is nothing compared to my worst back then. So I try to keep that in mind a lot.
And that's super true too. And I get that reminder from my friend who just had her baby, which is really exciting. A healthy baby girl.
Congratulations to her. I saw a picture, so I can attest that she's super cute.
Yay. She listens every week, so she'll be excited. But she reminds me all the time. She's like, Vicky, do you remember when your sugars were 18 or 17 or 22? She's like, maybe 10 isn't that bad.
Exactly. Yesterday, I was actually at the dentist. And before we started, he asked me if he could see my blood sugar levels inside a Dexcom. I showed him it was 155. And my response is like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. Instead of celebrating, he told me he thought that was really high and he wasn't sure if he should get started. Which really shows you that it's all about perspective. You know your body better than anyone else, though, so you know what your target is.
Oh, completely. I yesterday was seeing patients, and I saw an A1C of 5.8%. And this patient had been followed for a few months to make sure that they weren't developing prediabetes. And that's totally standard of care. But from my perspective, I'm like, 5.8? That's a good A1C.
I could never.
And so it is totally just a matter of perspective. Everything is.
Definitely.
And so I think it's really important when we're thinking about goals and talking to our partners, everything is relative. And so like what's a good A1C or a good sugar for one person is not going to be the same for someone else. And it's important to have those conversations.
Yeah, that open communication is going to be your best friend when it comes to having a relationship with a diabetic. And going back to what I was saying before with diabetics needing to communicate how they're feeling and educating the person they're in a relationship with, I think that it's equally important that partners of diabetics work on finding the right balance of support. So everyone sets their own boundaries, and obviously this is going to be unique person to person. So as long as you're being respected, define your own expectations, but make sure you're both well aware of them. I can tell you that the people I hold to the highest regard in my life are the ones that test with me. They offer to drive with me when I'm going to the doctor and I'm a little nervous. Maybe they'll go to blood work. They wait with me when I can't eat. And they just, anyone who makes me feel like my diabetes isn't a burden. To me, that boundary is broken though when supportive transforms into judgmental. I get the you can't eat that, you're diabetic card way more than you'd think. Usually I try to brush it off because I get that the person means well. And depending on the delivery, sometimes it's funny. But all I'm getting from that is, again, that idea that someone's just looking at me as my diabetes. I feel like they're constantly judging every decision I make, and they think that I'm less capable than I am. These kind of assumptions are not the same as asking questions, or maybe you find an article online and it's offering some advice that I hadn't known about before. You can bring it up in a certain way that doesn't sound so, you're doing this wrong, you should be managing your diabetes this way. There's a balance and it takes work, but that's what that open communication is there for.
Yeah, I think educating yourself as the partner of a diabetic is so important. Read online as much as you want, as much as you can. Find things on, like, there's tons of good resources out there, but don't take that as gospel, because we are all so unique in how we manage our diabetes, in what works best for us. I mean, like, the best example is a low carb versus high carb diet for diabetes, right? Like, there's so much good research out there for both sides. There isn't a right way to eat as a diabetic, and I will say that very firmly. The best way to eat is the way that feels best for you. And so I think it's easy as a partner of a diabetic to say, oh, let's try the keto diet. It's supposed to be great for diabetics. But that can come across really poorly when we have spent, like, I don't know about you, Gianna, but like, I know in the last 6 months, I've spent like learning how to eat as a diabetic, learning how my body feels best, learning all these things. Don't tell me what to do.
Oh yeah, I'm with you on that one. I'm actually going to use that as a transition into something else that irks me that I guess relates to relationships, friendships, whoever it may be in your life. But when someone says you chose blank. So a couple years ago, I was at a theme park with a friend and we joined a line that was probably an hour and a half long. It was a long line, more or less. And I went into line knowing that my sugar was dropping a little bit, but I thought it would be fine. I had some snacks on me, but probably 30 to 40 minutes into the line, my sugar wasn't rising. My pump had been suspended. I went through everything I had on me to eat or drink. And so I decided to make the decision to leave the line. I told my friend they didn't have to come with me. They could stay if they wanted to, but they were supportive. They came with me. They didn't make it seem like a big deal. And it wasn't until later on when we met up with the rest of the group and they asked us why we got out of line that my friend told everyone that I chose to have a low blood sugar and I chose to leave the line because Well, I don't know. I mean, in reality, I chose to take care of myself, but the way they were wording it with the "you chose to have a low blood sugar" just really bothered me, because when it comes to my diabetes, the thing that annoys me most is inconveniencing other people. I don't want you to feel like my diabetes is your diabetes. In this situation, I could see how that person could feel that because I had a low blood sugar, they had to get out of line. You know, they don't want to look rude staying in line. But at the same time, I just thought it was such an inappropriate joke, because I promise you, if I'm the reason we're held back from something, I already feel more than bad enough on my own, so I don't need someone else making that even worse. It also just made me feel like I can't openly talk about when my sugar's high or low with this person, because I know that they think whatever my sugar level is, it's my fault, and that I messed up, and I can't manage my diabetes on my own. I don't want to feel like I'm less capable than I am. I didn't choose any of this. I'm stuck with it.
Yeah, I can imagine that that would have been really hard to hear, especially when someone's supportive in the moment and you're feeling comfortable, and then that happens. It can be tough to manage. I know I've had the same thing, like that choice word is a bad one. Please don't tell me I'm choosing to have a low sugar or a high sugar. If I was choosing, I would choose to have a working pancreas and not have to put this much time into managing my sugars. And I've had that same thing. And again, like, it's just something that's a trigger word for me. Oh, why do you choose to run so low so that you're going low all the time? It's like, well, I'm not actually choosing to go low all the time. That happens.
Yeah, and I think it comes back down to that misunderstanding thing, where someone who doesn't have diabetes is confused about how it works, and a low may seem totally preventable every time, but in reality, you can't always control your blood sugar whether you want to or not.
Absolutely. I think that those are where those, like, just having that conversation, having that open communication is so important, because it's okay for people to make those mistakes. I never want people to not ask or not say something, but it's good to have those conversations after the fact and say, hey, like, you know, when you told me to take off my Libre, that actually really hurt me because I can't. And it just reminded me that I can't. Or like, hey, when you said that I'm choosing to have low sugars, that hurt my feelings because I'm actually choosing to try to manage my sugars. And sometimes it just doesn't work. And so it's like you're saying, I'm choosing to fail. And for me, in my relationship, that's always been an expectation that we will have those conversations and that things will change. And now those words aren't used anymore, right? Me taking off my Dexcom isn't an option, and that's understood. And we had a conversation about the word choice, right? I'm not choosing to be bad at managing my diabetes. I'm actually choosing to be good at it and just struggling.
As a partner of a diabetic, you want the diabetic to be able to communicate with you when there's something wrong, and you want them to be able to come to you when they really do need help. So by keeping that open communication, by responding in a healthy and kind way, you're giving them that room to come to you and tell you whenever something's wrong.
I think something else in terms of when you're communicating with people is it's important to know how you're going to ask people for help when you need it. And I know something that really frustrates me is when a support person brushes me off, when they say, oh no, everything's going to be fine. Oh no, your sugar won't go low. It's hard to ask for help when I'm asking for help. So I need some sort of reassurance that you believe me. I know my diabetes. So I think instead of giving sort of what I consider to be like false platitudes, where you're like, oh no, don't worry about that, Vicky, it'll be fine, I want my support people to thank me for trusting them and to be assured that I know what I'm asking for and I know what I'm doing when I'm doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't like false platitudes. I don't like babying. The other week I went hiking with a friend, and the entire way up the mountain I was having low blood sugars nonstop, and I needed to stop probably every 5-10 minutes. For most people this would be incredibly annoying, and even if they didn't complain out loud, I'm used to getting faces or sighs. But this friend sat down with me, didn't comment on it, didn't seem upset at all. They were not fazed by this. The part that really meant the most to me was the fact that every time I said I could get back up again, they didn't question me. They didn't ask if I was sure. They didn't ask if I was okay, if I could handle the rest of the mountain. It was always just, you're 23, you can take care of yourself, let's go. And I really appreciated that, because I think if there was any other hesitation, I would have started to feel that judgment again, and I wouldn't want to stop. I would just keep pushing through, because that's how I am. So I'm really grateful to have had this specific friend with me during this trip, because it really helped me do it, and I felt so good when I reached the top of the mountain, and my sugar hit 100 when I got there. So it was just a really great day after I powered through those lows.
Yeah, I think that that's the most important thing, is both the trust that you've got this and sort of the expectation that it's okay if you have to take a break. So I was on a walk recently and my sugar was dropping really quite quickly. I had had an applesauce and it just kept dropping. And I also just started feeling really sick. So it was like, it was really hot out and we were walking and I had to sit down. And it's the first time that I've ever been concerned that like, maybe I won't be able to finish my walk. We had lots of juice. It would have just taken some time, but it is really important that you feel comfortable enough to say, like, hey, I'm not feeling well. Like, we need to sit down for a minute. And in my experience, that happens with other people who aren't diabetic too, for whatever reason, right? Oh, you need to tie your shoe, or you need to sit down because you've been walking too fast, or whatever happens. A lot of it is reciprocal. And as diabetics, we just have sort of way more sudden changes than most people deal with, right? When you have like a rock in your shoe, you feel that for a while before you have to stop and take it out. When my sugar's dropping, I'm fine until I'm not.
Yeah, I think that brings up another problem of diabetics feeling guilty over things they shouldn't feel guilty about. For example, Dexcom alarms. I think we can all agree that no one wants to be sitting in the middle of class or sitting in the middle of the shift and your Dexcom alarm is blaring, or someone's staying over your house and that happens and keeps them up all night, despite whether you're awake to hear it or not. It's frustrating, it's annoying, and that's another one of those things where I promise it's likely annoying me just as much as you, if not more. The other day I was working and my Dexcom alarm was going off for like 2 hours of my shift. I could not get my sugar back in range. And eventually my coworker asked me what that noise was, and I explained to her what my Dexcom was, what it was doing, and me being me, I apologized and said, I'm sorry, once my sugar hits a certain level, I can no longer do anything. I can't silence this alarm. And she really shocked me with her response. She said something along the lines of, I would never want you to shut this off. If anything, turn it up if you want to. I want you to be able to take care of yourself. If you need a minute, let me know. It just really meant a lot to me because she understood what my Dexcom was doing. She understood its importance. And she acknowledged the fact that I should be taking care of myself before anything else, which is something I struggle with sometimes. So it really helps me prioritize myself when other people understand that need for me to address my sugars before anything else. I really hope she knows how much I appreciated that moment.
As the person who has the Dexcom attached to us with the alarm, rest assured it's more annoying for us. Like, I spend a lot of money on the Dexcom. I have to insert it every 10 days. I have to live with it on my body. Please respect the fact that it really does make my life easier and sometimes saves my life. I think that that's something that is just a non-starter for any future relationship for me, if I have one, like hopefully not, but it's just, I need you to realize that this is something, I mean, first of all, for anyone who doesn't have a Dexcom, we can't turn off the alarms. There is no way. There are some alarms that will push through our phone no matter how silenced it is. And so I think it's really important to recognize that we can't make it any quieter than it is. If our sugars are high, the only thing we could do is turn off our alarms completely, which is like not having a Dexcom at all, or take it off.
Exactly. I think it really helps when you think about this alarm as something that's saving the person you really care about, or if it's yourself, keeping you alive. It's super annoying, but it's super important.
And honestly, Carlin loves my Dexcom alarms. He appreciates that he can hear them. He appreciates that he gets them on his phone. My other friend, who's my Dexcom buddy in town, she appreciates getting them. I think that there's a lot of really great people out there who will respect your diabetes, respect your Dexcom, try and learn from you, apologize when they make mistakes. You know, like, there's a way to have these good, strong friendships and relationships.
Yeah, definitely. Never let someone make you feel like your diabetes is an inconvenience, a burden, anything like that. You deserve better and you can 100% find better.
And I can attest to that. And so now we'll finish the episode, as usual, by talking about our weekly goals. And we would love to hear yours too. So let us know at T1 Talks on Instagram what your goals are for the week. So Gianna, how did things go last week with pre-bolusing?
So I actually did pre-bolus for most of the week. The only thing I sort of struggled with was learning how to pre-bolus with my lows. I found that whenever I put a low blood sugar into my pump and it calculated lower insulin doses, it was still a bit too much too fast for me. So that's definitely something I have to be careful with in the future. Overall, though, I was impressed with how much I pre-bolused. How did the journaling go with you?
Actually, it went really well. I've been saving up some good stories that are to come on our Instagram, so stay tuned there. And so far, I've had 3 days back, and they were definitely a little rocky. I had high sugars all day on Monday because of my first ever kinked cannula. And so for anyone who is wondering, the cannulas is the little tube that delivers insulin into my body. So it's super important that it's straight and that it isn't bent or blocked. So with the kink, it meant that I was sort of getting random and really small bits of insulin for almost 2 days. And my sugars definitely showed that. I had to reset my high alarms twice throughout my shift, which I've never had to do. And my alarms went off when I was with patients and when I was with my supervising doctor. But honestly, I was surprised. Like, nobody said anything. Nobody was concerned. I didn't get anybody worried about it. So,
broken cannulas are the worst because you can't even see them. So you're left with high sugars for, you know, usually hours, in some cases days, like you had. I've had a few, and I actually had a similar problem the other day because my Omnipod fell off its patch that it's normally stuck to, and all that was hanging in there was the cannula. Financially, I wanted to leave that on for as long as possible, but eventually I started to feel the insulin pile up, and if you have smelled insulin, you know there's a certain stench that comes with it. I knew that there was no point in keeping it on anymore. I wasn't getting enough insulin into my body, so I took it off and changed my pod.
And that's exactly where I ended up too, is I was hoping for that one extra day out of my infusion set, and I just had to change it early because my sugars were not coming down. They were just going higher, and I was just getting really frustrated.
For sure. You never want to take it off, but sometimes you have no other option.
Exactly. So what is your goal for this week going to be?
So recently I faced a challenge I've faced many times in my life, and I struggled to say no to too many people. I took on 4 to 5 jobs at once, and I found myself feeling a little overwhelmed and a little stressed. But this week I am taking my friend's advice and learning how to prioritize myself. I'm going to work on doing things that I find fun, things that relieve stress, anything that improves my overall mental health. Sometimes I get too caught up in work that I forget to take care of myself. And a big part of taking care of yourself is mental health. So making sure I'm not burning out and I'm doing things that I really love this week.
That's a great goal. I think saying no is a learned skill and it just takes time and practice.
Yeah, and I think I'm definitely getting better at it. It's definitely difficult for someone who loves working and loves always doing something, but there's definitely a fine line there.
That's great.
So how about you? What are you thinking about doing this week?
So I think my goal for this week is going to be keeping up with walking. So I've been walking a ton over the summer, and now, like, even as work and school and clinicals get more intense, I want to sort of keep up with that, or at least keep that in my routine. I typically have a really hard time balancing work and exercise. I'm a bit of an all or nothing kind of person. And so I really want to focus on including both in my routine in a sustainable way.
Oh, that's a great idea. Walks tend to make everything better.
I love them.
Well, as usual, we'll let you guys know how those go next week.
And so thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.